But you heard Gallagher. 20 to 25 years ago. That's early 80s on the high side. I don't know about 84 being early 80s. Well, maybe he moved to that house because of the body. He buried the kid there before and wanted to be close by, so he moves into the neighborhood. I mean, Harry, these are sick fucks, these guys. Bosch nodded. There's that. But I just wasn't getting the vibe from the guy. I believed him. Harry, your mojo's been wrong before. Oh, yeah. I think it's him. He's the guy. Hear how he said, just because I touched a boy? Probably to him, sodomizing a 9-year-old is reaching out and touching somebody. Edgar was being reactionary, but Bosch didn't call him on it. He was a father. Bosch wasn't. We'll get the records and we'll see. We also have to go to the hall to check the reverses, see who was on that street back then. The reverses were phone books that listed residents by address instead of by name. A collection of the books for every year was kept in the Hall of Records. They would allow the detectives to determine who was living on the street during the 1975 to 1985 range they were looking at as the boy's time of death. "That's going to be a lot of fun," Edgar said. "Oh, yeah," Bosch said. "I can't wait." They drove in silence the rest of the way. Bosch became depressed. He was disappointed with himself for how he had run the investigation so far. The bones were discovered Wednesday, and the full investigation took off on Thursday. He knew he should have run the names, a basic part of the investigation, sooner than Sunday. By delaying it, he had given Trent the advantage. He'd had 3 days to expect and prepare for their questions. He had even been briefed by an attorney. He could have even been practicing his responses and looks in a mirror. Bosch knew what his internal lie detector said, but he also knew that a good actor could beat it. Chapter 15. Bosch drank a beer on the back porch with the sliding door open so he could hear Clifford Brown on the stereo. Almost 50 years before, the trumpet player made a handful of recordings and then checked out in a car crash. Bosch thought about all the music that had been lost. He thought about young bones in the ground and what had been lost. And then he thought about himself and what he had lost. Somehow the jazz and the beer and the grayness he was feeling about the case had all mixed together in his mind. He felt on edge, like he was missing something that was right in front of him. For a detective, it was just about the worst feeling in the world. At 11 p.m., he came inside and turned the music down so he could watch the news on Channel 4. Judy Surtain's report was the third story after the first break. The anchor said, "New developments in the Laurel Canyon bone case. We go to Judy Surtain at the scene." "Ah, shit," Bosch said, not liking the sound of the introduction. The program cut to a live shot of Surtain on Wonderland Avenue, standing on the street in front of a house Bosch recognized as Trent's. "I'm here on Wonderland Avenue in Laurel Canyon, where 4 days ago a dog brought home a bone that authorities say was human. The dog's find led to the discovery of more bones belonging to a young boy who investigators believe was murdered and then buried more than 20 years ago." Bosch's phone started ringing. He picked it up off the arm of the TV chair and answered it. "Hold on," he said, and then held the phone down by his side while he watched the news report. Surtain said, "Tonight, the lead investigators on the case returned to the neighborhood to speak to one resident who lives less than 100 yards from the place where the boy was buried. That resident is Nicholas Trent, a 57-year-old Hollywood set decorator." The program cut to tape of Bosch being questioned by Surtain that night. But it was used as visual filler, while Surtain continued her report in a voiceover dub. "Investigators declined to comment on their questioning of Trent, but Channel 4 News has learned..." Bosch sat down heavily on the chair and braced himself. "That Trent was once convicted of molesting a young boy." The sound was then brought up on the street interview just as Bosch said, "That's really all I can tell you." The next jump was to video of Trent standing in his doorway and waving the camera off and closing the door. "Trent declined comment on his status in the case, but neighbors in the normally quiet hillside neighborhood expressed shock upon learning of Trent's background. As the report shifted to a taped interview of a resident Bosch recognized as Victor Ulrich, Bosch hit the mute button on the TV remote and brought the phone up. It was Edgar.
"You watching this shit?" he asked.
"Oh, yeah."
"We look like shit. We look like we told her. They used your quote out of context, Harry. We're going to be fucked by this."
"Well, you didn't tell her, right?"
"Harry, you think I'd tell some—"
"No, I don't. I was confirming. You didn't tell her, right?"
"Right."
"And neither did I. So yeah, we're going to take some shit, but we're clear on it."
"Well, who else knew?"
"I doubt Trent was the one who told her.
About a million people now know he's a child molester."
Bosch realized the only people who knew were Kiz, who had gotten the records flag while doing the computer work, and Julia Brasher, whom Bosch told while he was making his excuse for missing dinner. Suddenly, a vision of Sertain standing at the roadblock on Wonderland came to him. Brasher had volunteered her help during both days of the hillside search and excavation. It was entirely possible that she had connected with Sertain in some way. Was she the reporter's source? The leak? "There didn't have to be a leak," Bosch said to Edgar. "All she needed was Trent's name. She could have gotten any cop she knew to run it on the box for her. Or she could have looked it up on the sexual offenders CD. It's public record." "Hold on." He had gotten a call waiting beep on the phone. He switched over and learned it was Lieutenant Billets calling. He told her to hold while he got off the other line. He clicked over. "Jerry, it's Bullets. I gotta call you back." "It's still me," Billets said. "Oh. Sorry. Hold on." He tried again and this time made the switch back. He told Edgar he'd call him back if Billets said anything he needed to know right away. "Otherwise, go with the plan," he added. "See you at Van Nuys at 8. He switched back over to Billets. "Bullets?" she said. "Is that what you guys call me?"
"What?"
"You said Bullets. When you thought I was Edgar, you called me Bullets." "You mean just now?"
"Yes, just now."
"I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about." "You mean when I was switching over to—"
"Never mind. It doesn't matter."
"I assume you saw Channel 4? "Yeah, I saw it. And all I can tell you is that it wasn't me and it wasn't Edgar. That woman got a tip that we were out there and we no-commented our way out of there. How she came up with his—"
"Harry, you didn't no-comment your way out of there. They have you on tape, your mouth moving, and then I hear you say, 'That's all I can say.' If you say, 'That's all,' that means you gave her something."
Bosch shook his head, even though he was on the phone. "I didn't give her shit. I just bullshitted my way by. I told her we were just finishing up the routine canvas of the neighborhood and I hadn't talked to Trent before."
"Was that true?"
"Not really. But I wasn't going to say we were there because the guy's a child molester. Look, she didn't know about Trent when we were there. If she did, she would have asked me. She found out later, and how, I don't know. That's what Jerry and I were just talking about." There was silence for a moment, before Billets continued. "Well, you better have your shit together on this tomorrow, because I want a written explanation from you that I can send up the line. Before that report on 4 was even over, I got a call from Captain LaValle, and she said she had already gotten a call from Deputy Chief Irving."
"Yeah. Yeah, typical. Right on down the food chain."
"Look, you know that leaking the criminal record of a citizen is against departmental policy, whether that citizen is the target of an investigation or not. I just hope you have your story straight on this. I don't need to tell you that there are people in the department just waiting for you to make a mistake they can sink their teeth into."
"Look, I'm not trying to downplay the leak. It was wrong and it was bad. But I'm trying to solve a murder here, Lieutenant, and now I've got a whole new obstacle to overcome. And that's what's typical. There's always something thrown in the way."
"Then you should be more careful next time."
"Careful of what? What did I do wrong? I'm following leads where they go."
Bosch immediately regretted the explosion of frustration and anger. Of those people in the department waiting for his self-destruction, Billets certainly wasn't on the list. She was only the messenger here. In the same moment, he realized his anger was also self-directed because he knew Billets was right.
He should have handled Sertain differently. Look. I'm sorry, he said in a low, even tone. It's just the case. It's got its hooks, you know.
I think I do,
Billets answered just as quietly.
And speaking of the case, what exactly is going on?
This whole thing with Trent came out of left field for me. I thought you were going to keep me up to date.
It all came up today, late. I was just going to fill you in the morning. I didn't know Channel 4 would be doing it for me, and doing it for LaValle and Irving as well.
Never mind them for now.
Tell me about Trent.
Chapter 16. It was well after midnight by the time Bosch got to Venice. Parking on the little streets near the canals was non-existent. He drove around looking for 10 minutes and ended up parking in the lot by the library out on Venice Boulevard and then walking back in. Not all of the dreamers drawn to Los Angeles came to make movies. Venice was the century-old dream of a man named Abbott Kinney. Before Hollywood and the film industry barely had a pulse, Kinney came to the marshlands along the Pacific. He envisioned a place built on a network of canals with arched bridges and a town center of Italian architecture. It would be a place emphasizing cultural and artistic learning, and he would call it Venice of America. But like most of the dreamers who come to Los Angeles, his vision was not uniformly shared or realized. Most financiers and investigators were cynical and passed on the opportunity to build Venice, putting their money into projects of less grand design. Venice of America was dubbed Kinney's Folly. But a century later, many of the canals and the arched bridges reflected in their waters remained, while the financiers and doomsayers and their projects were long swept away by time. Bosch liked the idea of Kinney's Folly outlasting them all. Bosch had not been to the canals in many years, though for a short period in his life, after returning from Vietnam, he had lived there in a bungalow with three other men he knew from overseas. In the years since, many of the bungalows had been erased, and modern 2- and 3-story homes costing $1 million or more had replaced them. Julia Brasher lived in a house at the corner of the Howland and Eastern Canals. Bosch expected it to be one of the new structures. He guessed she probably used her law firm money to buy it or even build it, but as he came to the address, he saw that he was wrong. Her house was a small bungalow made of white clapboard, with an open front porch overlooking the joining of the two canals. Bosch saw lights on behind the windows of her house. It was late, but not that late. If she worked the 3-to-11 shift, then it was unlikely she was used to going to bed before 2. He stepped up onto the porch, but hesitated before knocking on the door. Until the doubts of the last hour had crept in, he had gotten only good feelings about Brasher and their fledgling relationship. He knew he now had to be careful. There could be nothing wrong, and yet he could spoil everything if he misstepped here. Finally, he raised his arm and knocked. Brasher answered right away.
I was wondering if you were going to knock or stand out there all night.
You knew I was standing here?
The porch is old. It creaks. I heard it.
Well, I got here and then figured it was too late. I should have called first.
Just come in. Is anything wrong?
Bosch came in and looked around. He didn't answer the question. The living room had an unmistakable beach flavor to it, right down to the bamboo and rattan furniture and the surfboard leaning in one corner. The only deviation was her equipment belt and holster hanging on a wall rack near the door. It was a rookie mistake, leaving it out like that, but Bosch assumed she was proud of her new career choice and wanted to remind friends outside the cop world of it.
Sit down, she said. I have some wine open. Would you like a glass?
Bosch thought a moment about whether mixing wine with the beer he'd had an hour earlier would lead to a headache the next day when he knew he'd have to be focused.
It's red.
I'll take just a little bit.
Gotta be sharp tomorrow, huh?
I guess.
She went into the kitchen while he sat down on the couch. He looked around the room and now saw a mounted fish with a long, sharp point hanging over the white brick fireplace. The fish was a brilliant blue, shading to black with a white and yellow underside. Mounted fish didn't bother him the way the heads of mounted game did, but he still didn't like the eye of the fish always watching.
"You catch this thing?" he called out.
"Yeah. Off Cabo. Took me 3.5 hours to bring it in."
She then appeared with 2 glasses of wine. "On 50-pound test line," she said. "That was a workout."
"What is it?"
"Black marlin."
She toasted the fish with her glass and then toasted Bosch.
"Hold fast."
Bosch looked at her.
"That's my new toast," she said.
"Hold fast.
It seems to cover everything."
She sat down on the chair closest to Bosch. Behind her was the surfboard. It was white with a rainbow design and a border running along the edges. It was a short board.
"So you surf the wild waves, too?"
She glanced back at the board and then at Bosch and smiled.
"I try to. Picked it up in Hawaii."
"You know John Burroughs?"
She shook her head.
"Lot of surfers in Hawaii. What beats does he surf?"
"No, I mean here. He's a cop. He works homicide out of Pacific Division. Lives on a walk street by the beach, not too far from here. He surfs. On his board it says, to protect and surf." She laughed.
"That's cool. I like that. I'll have to get that put on my board."
Bosch nodded.
"John Burroughs, huh? I'll have to look him up."
She said it with just a touch of teasing in her voice.
Bosch smiled and said, "And maybe not." He liked the way she kidded him like that. It all felt good to Bosch, which made him feel all the more out of sorts because of his reason for being there. He looked at his wine glass.
"I've been fishing all day and didn't catch a thing," he said. "Microfish, mostly."
"I saw you on the news tonight," she said. "Are you trying to put the squeeze on that guy? The child molester?"
Bosch sipped his wine to give himself time to think. She had opened the door. He now just had to step through very carefully.
"What do you mean?" he asked.
"Well, giving that reporter his criminal background. I figured you must be making some kind of play, you know. Turning up the heat on him? To make him talk or something. It seems kind of risky."
"Why?"
"Well, first of all, trusting a reporter is always risky. I know that from back when I was a lawyer and got burned. And second, you never know how people are going to react when their secrets are no longer secrets."
Bosch studied her for a moment and then shook his head.
"I didn't give it to her," he said.
"Somebody else did."
He studied her eyes for any kind of tell. There was nothing.
"There's going to be trouble over it," he added.
She raised her eyebrows in surprise.
"Still no tell."
"Why? If you didn't give her the information, why would there..."
She stopped, and now Bosch could see her put it together. He saw the disappointment fill her eyes.
"Oh, Harry."
He tried to back out through the door.
"What?"
"Don't worry about it. I'll be fine."
"It wasn't me, Harry." "Is that what you're here about? To see if I'm the leak or the source or whatever you'd call it?"
She abruptly put her wine glass down on the coffee table.
Red wine lapped over the edge and onto the table.
She didn't do anything about it. Bosch knew there was no use trying to avoid the collision. He had screwed up.
"Look, only 4 people knew,
and I was one of them. So you thought you'd come here undercover and find out if it was me?"
She waited for a response. Finally, all Bosch could do was nod.
"Well, it wasn't me. And I think you should go now."
Bosch nodded and put down his glass.
He stood up.
Look, I'm sorry. I screwed it up. I thought the best way to not mess anything up, you know, between you and me, was to...
He made a helpless gesture with his hands as he headed to the door.
Was to do the undercover thing, he continued. I just didn't want to mess it up, that's all.
But I had to know. I think if you were me, you would have felt the same way about it. He opened the door and looked back at her.
I'm sorry, Julia.
Thanks for the wine.
He turned to go.
Harry? He turned back. She came to him and reached up and grabbed the lapels of his jacket with both hands. She slowly pulled him forward and then pushed him backward, as if roughing up a suspect in slow motion. Her eyes dropped to his chest as her mind worked and she came to a decision. She stopped shaking him but kept her grasp on his jacket.
I can get over it, she said. I think.
She looked up to his eyes and pulled him forward. She kissed him hard on the mouth for a long time and then pushed him back. She let go.
I hope. Call me tomorrow.
Bosch nodded and stepped through the door. She closed it. Bosch went down the porch to the sidewalk next to the canal. He looked at the reflection of the lights of all the houses on the water. An arched footbridge, lighted by the moon and nothing else, crossed the canal 20 yards away, its reflection perfect on the water. He turned and walked back up the steps to the porch. He hesitated at the door again, and soon Brasher opened it.
The porch creaks, remember?
He nodded, and she waited. He wasn't sure how to say what he wanted to say. Finally, he just began. One time when I was in one of those tunnels we were talking about last night, I came up head-on with some guy. He was VC. Black pajamas, greased face. We sort of looked at each other for a split second, and I guess instincts took over. We both raised up and fired at the same time. Simultaneous. And then we fucking ran in opposite directions, both of us scared shitless, screaming in the dark. He paused as he thought about the story, seeing it more than remembering it. Anyway, I thought he had to have hit me. It was almost point blank, too close to miss. I thought my gun had backfired and jammed or something. The kick had felt wrong. When I got up top, the first thing I did was check myself. No blood. No pain. I took all of my clothes off and checked myself. Nothing. He had missed. Point blank, and somehow the guy had missed. She stepped over the door's threshold and leaned against the front wall beneath the porch light. She didn't say anything, and he pressed on. Anyway, then I checked my .45 for a jam, and I found out why he hadn't hit me. The guy's bullet was in the barrel of my gun. With mine. We had pointed at each other, and his shot went right up the barrel of my gun. What were the chances of that? 1,000,000 to 1? 1,000,000,000? As he spoke, he held his empty hand out as a gun pointing at her. His hand was extended directly in front of his chest. The bullet that day in the tunnel had been meant for his heart. I guess I just want you to know that I know how lucky I was with you tonight. He nodded, and then turned and went down the steps. Chapter 17. Death investigation is a pursuit with countless dead ends, obstacles, and colossal chunks of wasted time and effort. Bosch knew this every day of his existence as a cop, but was reminded of it once again when he got to the homicide table shortly before noon Monday and found his morning's time and effort had most likely been wasted, while a brand new obstacle awaited him. The homicide squad had the area at the rear corner of the detective bureau. The squad consisted of 3 teams of 3. Each team had a table consisting of the 3 detectives' desks pushed together,
two facing each other, the third along one side. Sitting at Bosch's table, in the slot left vacant by Kiz Ryder's departure, was a young woman in a business suit. She had dark hair and even darker eyes. They were eyes sharp enough to peel a walnut, and they held on Bosch his whole way through the squad room.
"Can I help you?" he asked when he got to the table.
"Harry Bosch?"
"That's me."
"Detective Carol Bradley, IAD. I need to take a statement from you."
Bosch looked around. There were several people in the squad room trying to act busy while surreptitiously watching.
"Statement about what?"
"Deputy Chief Irving asked our division to determine if the criminal record of Nicholas Trent was improperly divulged to the media."
Bosch still hadn't sat down.
He put his hands on the top of his chair and stood behind it. He shook his head.
"I think it's pretty safe to assume it was improperly divulged."
"Then I need to find out who did it."
Bosch nodded.
"I'm trying to run an investigation here, and all anybody cares about is..."
"Look, I know you think it's bullshit, and I may think it's bullshit, but I've got the order. So let's go into one of the rooms and put your story on tape. It won't take long. And then you can go back to your investigation."
Bosch put his briefcase on the table and opened it. He took out his tape recorder. He had remembered it while driving around all morning delivering search warrants at the local hospitals.
"Speaking of tape, why don't you take this into one of the rooms and listen to it first? I had it on last night. It should end my involvement in this pretty quick."
She hesitantly took the recorder, and Bosch pointed to the hallway that led to the three interview rooms.
"I'm still going to need to..."
"Fine. Listen to the tape, then we'll talk. Your partner, too. He should be in any time now." Bradley went down the hall with the recorder. Bosch finally sat down and didn't bother to look at any of the other detectives. It wasn't even noon, but he felt exhausted. He had spent the morning waiting for a judge in Van Nuys to sign the search warrants for medical records, and then driving across the city delivering them to the legal offices of 19 different hospitals. Edgar had taken 10 of the warrants and headed off on his own. With fewer to deliver, he was then going downtown to conduct record searches on Nicholas Trent's criminal background and to check the reverse directories and property records for Wonderland Avenue. Bosch noticed that waiting for him was a stack of phone messages and the latest batch of call-in tips from the front desk. He took the phone messages first. 9 out of 12 of them were from reporters, all no doubt wanting to follow up on Channel 4's report on Trent the night before and then rebroadcast during the morning news program. The other 3 were from Trent's lawyer, Edward Morton. He had called 3 times, between 8 and 9:30 a.m. Bosch didn't know Morton, but expected he was calling to complain about Trent's record being given to the media. He normally wasn't quick to return calls to lawyers, but decided it would be best to get the confrontation over with and to assure Morton that the leak had not come from the investigators on the case. Even though he doubted that Morton would believe anything he said, he picked up the phone and called back. A secretary told him that Morton had gone to a court hearing but was due to check in at any moment. Bosch said he would be waiting for him to call again. After hanging up, Bosch dropped the pink slips with the reporter's numbers on them into the trash can next to his spot at the table. He started going through the call-in sheets and quickly noticed that the desk officers were now asking the questions he had typed out the morning before and given to Mankiewicz. On the 11th report in the pile, he came across a direct hit. A woman named Sheila Delacroix had called at 8:41 a.m. that morning and said she had seen the Channel 4 report that morning. She said her younger brother, Arthur Delacroix, disappeared in 1980 in Los Angeles. He was 12 years old at the time and was never heard from since. In answer to the medical questions, she responded that her brother had been injured during a fall from a skateboard a few months before his disappearance. He suffered a brain injury that required hospitalization and neurosurgery. She did not remember the exact medical details, but was sure the hospital was Queen of Angels. She could not recall the name of any of the doctors who treated her brother. Other than an address and callback number for Sheila Delacroix,
That was all the information on the report. Bosch circled the word skateboard on the sheet. He opened his briefcase and got out a business card Bill Gollaher had given him. He called the first number and got a machine at the anthropologist's office at UCLA. He called the second and got Gollaher while he was eating lunch in Westward Village.
Got a quick question.
The injury that required surgery on the skull.
The hematoma?
Right. Could that have been caused by a fall from a skateboard? There was silence, and Bosch let Gollaher think. The clerk who took the calls to the general lines in the squad room came up to the homicide table and shot Bosch a peace sign. Bosch covered his receiver.
Who is it?
Kiz Ryder.
Tell her to hold.
He uncovered the receiver.
Doc, you there?
Yes, I'm just thinking.
It might be possible, depending on what it was he hit, but a fall just to the ground, I would say it's not likely.
You had a tight fracture pattern, which indicates a small area of surface-to-surface contact. Also, the location is high up on the cranium. It's not the back of the head, which you would normally associate with fall injuries.
Bosch felt some of the wind going out of his sails. He had thought he might have an ID on the victim.
Is this a particular person you're talking about?
Gollaher asked.
Yeah, we just got a tip.
Are there x-rays? Surgical records?
I'm working on it.
Well, I'd like to see them to make a comparison.
As soon as I get them.
What about the other injuries?
Could they be from skateboarding?
Of course, some of them could be from that, Gollaher said. But I would say not all. The ribs, the twist fractures.
Also, some of these injuries dated to very early childhood, Detective. There aren't many three-year-olds on skateboards, I would think.
Bosch nodded and tried to think if there was anything else to ask.
Detective, you do know that in abuse cases, the reported cause of injury and the true cause are not often the same?
I understand. Whoever brought the kid into the emergency room wouldn't volunteer he hit him with a flashlight or whatever.
Right. There would be a story. The child would adhere to it.
Skateboard accident.
It's possible.
Okay, Doc, I gotta go. I'll get you the x-rays as soon as I get them.
Thanks.
He punched line 2 on the phone.
Kiz?
Harry, hi, how are you doing?
Busy. What's up?
I feel awful, Harry. I think I fucked up.
Bosch leaned back in his chair. He would never have guessed it was her.
Channel 4?
Yeah, Yesterday, after you left Parker and my partner stopped watching the football game, he asked what was up with you being in there. So I told him. I'm still trying to establish the relationship, Harry, you know? I told him I ran the names for you and there was a hit. One of the neighbors had a molestation record. That's all I told him, Harry, I swear.
Bosch breathed out heavily. He actually felt better. His instinct about Ryder had been right on. She was not the leak. She had simply trusted someone she should have been able to trust.
Kids, I got IAD sitting up here waiting to talk to me about this.
How do you know Thornton gave it to Channel 4?
I saw the report on TV this morning when I was getting ready.
I know Thornton knows that reporter, Sertain. Thornton and I worked a case a few months ago. An insurance murder on the West Side. It got some media play and he was feeding her stuff off the record. I saw them together. Then yesterday, after I told him about the hit, he said he had to go to the can. He picked the sports page up and went down the hall. But he didn't go to the can. We got a call out and I went down and banged on the door to tell him we were rolling. He didn't answer. I didn't really think anything about it until I saw the news today. I think he didn't go to the can because he went into another office or down to the lobby to use a phone to call her.
Well, it explains a lot.
I'm really sorry, Harry. That TV report didn't make you look good at all.
I'm going to talk to IAD. Just hold on to that, Kiz, for now.
I'll let you know if I need you to talk to IAD.
But what are you going to do?
Get a new partner. I can't work with this guy.
Be careful. You start jumping partners and pretty soon you'll be all alone.
I'd rather work alone than with some asshole I can't trust.
There's that.
What about you?
The offer still stand?
What? I'm an asshole you can trust?
You know what I mean.
The offer stands.
All you have to do is,
hey, Harry, I gotta go. Here he comes.
Okay, bye.
Bosch hung up and rubbed his mouth with his hand as he thought about what to do about Thornton. He could tell Kiz's story to Carol Bradley, but there was still too much room in it for error. He wouldn't feel comfortable going to IAD with it unless he was sure. The actual idea of going to IAD about anything repulsed him, but in this instance, someone was harming Bosch's investigation, and that was something he could not let pass. After a few minutes, he came up with a plan and checked his watch. It was 10 minutes before noon. He called Kiz Ryder back.
It's Harry. Is he there?
Yeah, why?
Repeat after me in a sort of excited voice.
You did, Harry?
Great.
Who was he?
You did, Harry? That's great. Who was he?
Okay, now you're listening.
Listening?
Listening.
Now say, how did a 10-year-old get here from New Orleans?
How did a 10-year-old get all the way here from New Orleans?
Perfect. Now hang up and don't say anything.
If Thornton asks you, tell him we ID'd the kid through dental records. He was a 10-year-old runaway from New Orleans, last seen in 1975. His parents are on a plane heading here now, and the chief is going to have a press conference about it all today at 4.
Okay, Harry. Good luck.
You too.
Bosch hung up and looked up. Edgar was standing across the table from him. He had heard the last part of the conversation, and his eyebrows were up.
No, it's all bullshit, Bosch said. I'm setting up the leak. And that reporter.
The leak? Who is the leak?
Kiz's new partner. We think.
Edgar slid into his chair and just nodded.
But we do have a possible ID on the bones, Bosch said.
He told Edgar about the call-in sheet on Arthur Delacroix and his subsequent conversations with Bill Gollaher.
1980? That's not going to work with Trent. I checked the reverses and property records. He wasn't on that street until 84, like he said last night.
Something tells me he isn't our guy.
Bosch thought about the skateboard again. It wasn't enough to alter his gut feeling.
Tell that to Channel 4.
Bosch's phone rang. It was Ryder.
He just went to the can.
You tell him about the press conference?
I told him everything.
He kept asking questions, the dipshit.
Well, if he tells her that everybody will have it at 4, she'll go out with the exclusive on the noon news. I'm gonna go watch.
Let me know.
He hung up and checked his watch. He still had a few minutes. He looked at Edgar.
By the way, IAD is in one of the rooms back there. We're under investigation.
Edgar's jaw dropped. Like most cops, he resented internal affairs because even when you did a good and honest job, the IAD could still be on you for any number of things. It was like the Internal Revenue Service, the way just seeing a letter with the IRS return address in the corner was enough to pull your guts into a knot.
Relax. It's about the Channel 4 thing. We should be clear of it in a few minutes. Come with me.
They went into Lieutenant Billet's office, where there was a small television on a stand. She was doing paperwork at her desk.
Do you mind if we check out Channel 4's noon report? Bosch asked.
Be my guest.
I'm sure Captain LaValle and Chief Irving are going to be watching as well.
The news program opened with a report on a 16-car pileup in the morning fog on the Santa Monica Freeway. It wasn't that significant a story. No one was killed, but they had good video, so it led the program. but the dog bone case had moved up to second billing. The anchor said they were going to Judy Surtain with another exclusive report. The program cut to Surtain sitting at a desk in the Channel 4 newsroom.
Channel 4 has learned that the bones found in Laurel Canyon have been identified as those of a 10-year-old runaway from New Orleans.
Bosch looked at Edgar, and then at Billets, who was rising from her seat with an expression of surprise on her face. Bosch put out his hand as if to signal her to wait a moment.
The parents of the boy, who reported him missing more than 25 years ago, are en route to Los Angeles to meet with police. The remains were identified through dental records. Later today, the chief of police is expected to hold a press conference where he will identify the boy and discuss the investigation. As reported by Channel 4 last night, police are focusing on...
Bosch turned the TV off.
Harry?
Jerry?
What's going on? Billets asked immediately.
All of that was bogus. I was smoking out the leak.
Who?
Kiz's new partner. A guy named Rick Thornton.
Bosch explained what Ryder had explained to him earlier. He then outlined the scam he had just pulled.
Where's the IAD detective? Billets asked.
One of the interview rooms. She's listening to a tape I had of me and the reporter last night.
A tape?
Why didn't you tell me about it last night?
I forgot about it last night.
All right, I'll take it from here. You feel Kiz is clean on this?
Bosch nodded.
She has to trust her partner enough to tell him anything.
He took that trust and gave it to Channel 4. I don't know what he's getting in return, but it doesn't matter. He's fucking with my case.
All right, Harry. I said I would handle it.
You go back to the case.
Anything new I should know about?
We've got a possible ID. This one legit. That we'll be running down today.
What about Trent?
We're letting that sit until we find out if this is the kid.
If it is, the timing is wrong. The kid disappeared in 1980. Trent didn't move into the neighborhood until 4 years later.
Great. Meantime, we've taken his buried secret and put it on TV.
Last I heard from patrol, the media was camped in his driveway.
Bosch nodded.
Talk to Thornton about it, he said.
Oh, we will.
She sat down behind her desk and picked up the phone. It was their cue to leave. On the way back to the table, Bosch asked Edgar if he had pulled the file on Trent's conviction.
Yeah, I got it. It was a weak case. Nowadays, the DA probably wouldn't have even filed on it.
They went to their respective spots at the table, and Bosch saw that he had missed a callback from Trent's lawyer. He reached for the phone, but then waited until Edgar finished his report. The guy worked as a teacher at an elementary school in Santa Monica. He was caught by another teacher in a stall in the bathroom holding an 8-year-old's penis while he urinated. He said he was teaching the kid how to aim it, that the kid kept pissing on the floor. What it came down to is the kid's story was all over the place, but didn't back his. And the parents said the boy already knew how to aim by the time he was 4. Trent was convicted and got a 2+1. He served 15 months of it up at Wayside. Bosch thought about all of this. His hand was still on the phone.
It's a long-ass jump from that to beating a kid to death with a baseball bat. Yeah, Harry, I'm beginning to like your mojo better all the time.
I wish I did. He picked up the phone and punched in the number for Trent's attorney, Edward Morton. He was transferred to the lawyer's cell phone. He was on his way to lunch.
Hello?
Detective Bosch.
Bosch, yes.
I want to know where he is.
Who?
Don't play this game, Detective. I've called every holding jail in the county. I want to be able to speak to my client right now.
I'm assuming you're speaking about Nicholas Trent.
Have you tried his job?
Home and work. No answer. Pager, too.
If you people have him, he's entitled to representation, and I am entitled to know. I'm telling you now, if you fuck with me on this, I will go right to a judge and the media.
We don't have your man, Counselor.
I haven't seen him since last night.
Yes, he called me after you left.
Then again after watching the news.
You people fucked him over. You should be ashamed of yourself.
Bosch's face burned with a rebuke, but he didn't respond to it. If he didn't personally deserve it, then the department did. He'd take the bullet for now.
Do you think he ran, Mr. Morton?
Why run if you're innocent?
I don't know. Ask O.J.
A horrible thought suddenly shot into Bosch's gut. He stood up, the phone still pressed to his ear.
Where are you now, Mr. Morton?
Sunset heading west, near Book Soup.
Turn around and come back. Meet me at Trent's house.
I have a lunch. I'm not going...
Meet me at Trent's house. I'm leaving now.
He put the phone in its cradle and told Edgar it was time to go. He'd explain on the way.
Chapter 18.
There was a small gathering of television reporters in the street in front of Nicholas Trent's house. Bosch parked behind the Channel 2 van, and he and Edgar got out. Bosch didn't know what Edward Morton looked like, but didn't see anyone in the group who looked like an attorney. After more than 25 years on the job, he had unerring instincts that allowed him to identify lawyers and reporters. Over the top of the car, Bosch spoke to Edgar before the reporters could hear them. If we have to go in, we'll do it around back, without the audience.
I gotcha.
They walked up to the driveway and were immediately accosted by the media crews, who turned on cameras and threw questions that went unanswered. Bosch noticed that Judy Surtain of Channel 4 was not among the reporters.
Are you here to arrest Trent?
Can you tell us about the boy from New Orleans?
What about the press conference? Media relations doesn't know anything about a press conference.
Is Trent a suspect or not?
Once Bosch was through the crowd and on Trent's driveway, he suddenly turned back and faced the cameras. He hesitated a moment as if composing his thoughts. What he really was doing was giving them time to focus and get ready. He didn't want anyone to miss this.
There is no press conference scheduled, Bosch said. There has been no identification of the bones yet. The man who lives in this house was questioned last night, as was every resident of this neighborhood. At no time was he called a suspect by the investigators on this case. Information leaked to the media by someone outside of the investigation and then broadcast without being checked first with the actual investigators has been completely wrong and damaging to the ongoing investigation. That's it. That's all I'm going to say. When there is some real and accurate information to report, we will give it to you through media relations.
He turned back around and headed up the driveway to the house with Edgar. The reporters threw more questions at them, but Bosch gave no indication of even hearing them. At the front door, Edgar knocked sharply and called out to Trent, telling him it was the police. After a few moments, he knocked again and made the same announcement. They waited again, and nothing happened.
The back? Edgar asked.
Yeah, or the garage has a door on the side. They walked across the driveway and started heading down the side of the house. The reporters yelled more questions. Bosch guessed they were so used to throwing questions that were not answered at people that it simply became natural for them to do it, and natural for them to know they would not be answered. Like a dog barking in the backyard long after the master has left for work. They passed the side door to the garage, and Bosch noted that he was correct in remembering that there was only a single key lock on the knob. They continued into the backyard. There was a kitchen door with a deadbolt and a key lock on the knob. There was also a sliding door which would be easy to pop open. Edgar stepped over to it, but looked down through the glass to the interior sliding track and saw that there was a wooden dowel in place that would prevent the door from being opened from the outside.
This won't work, Harry, he said.
Bosch had a small pouch containing a set of lock picks in his pocket. He didn't want to have to work the deadbolt on the kitchen door.
Let's do the garage, unless...
He walked over to the kitchen door and tried it. It was unlocked, and he opened the door. In that moment, he knew they would find Trent dead inside. Trent would be the helpful suicide, the one who leaves the door open so people don't have to break in.
Shit!
Edgar came over, pulling his gun from its holster.
You're not gonna need that, Bosch said.
He stepped into the house, and they moved through the kitchen.
"Mr. Trent?" Edgar yelled.
"Police!
Police in the house! Are you here, Mr. Trent?"
"Take the front," Bosch said. They split up, and Bosch went down the short hallway to the rear bedrooms. He found Trent in the walk-in shower of the master bath. He had taken two wire hangers and fashioned a noose, which he had attached to the stem pipe of the shower. He had then leaned back against the tiled wall and dropped his weight and asphyxiated himself. He was still dressed in the clothes he had worn the night before. His bare feet were on the floor tiles. There were no indications at all that Trent had had second thoughts about killing himself. Being that it was not a suspension hanging, he could have stopped his death at any time. He didn't. Bosch would have to leave it for the coroner's people, but he judged by the darkening of the body's tongue, which was distended from the mouth, that Trent had been dead at least 12 hours. That would put his death in the vicinity of the very early morning, not long after Channel 4 had first announced his hidden past to the world and labeled him a suspect in the Bones case.
"Harry?"
Bosch nearly jumped. He turned around and looked at Edgar.
"Don't do that to me, man. What?"
Edgar was staring at the body as he spoke.
"He left a 3-page note out on the coffee table."
Bosch stepped out of the shower and pushed past Edgar. He headed toward the living room, taking a pair of latex gloves from his pocket and blowing into them to expand the rubber before snapping them on.
"Did you read the whole thing?"
"Yeah. He says he didn't do the kid. He says he's killing himself because the police and reporters have destroyed him and he can't go on. Like that. There's some weird stuff, too."
Bosch went into the living room. Edgar was a few steps behind him. Bosch saw 3 handwritten pages spread side by side on the coffee table. He sat down on the couch in front of them.
"This how they were?"
"Yep. I didn't touch them."
Bosch started reading the pages. What he presumed were Trent's last words were a rambling denial of the murder of the boy on the hillside and a purging of anger over what had been done to him.
"Now everybody will know. You people have ruined me. Killed me. The blood is on you, not on me. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. No, no, no. I never hurt anyone. Never, never, never. Not a soul on this earth. I love the children. Love. No, it was you who hurt me. You. But it is I who can't live with the pain of what you have ruthlessly caused. I can't."
It was repetitive and almost as if someone had written down an extemporaneous diatribe rather than sat down with pen and paper and wrote out their thoughts. The middle of the second page was blocked off, and inside the box were names under a heading of "Those Found Responsible." The list started with Judy Surtain, included the anchor on the Channel 4 nightly news, and listed Bosch, Edgar, and 3 names Bosch didn't recognize: Calvin Stumbo, Max Rebner, and Alicia Felzer. Stumbo was the cop and Rebner was the DA on the first case, Edgar said. In the 60s. Bosch nodded.
And Felzer?
Don't know that one.
The pen with which the pages were apparently written was on the table next to the last page. Bosch didn't touch it because he planned to have it checked for Trent's fingerprints. As he continued to read, Bosch noticed that each page was signed at the bottom with Trent's signature. At the end of the last page, Trent made an odd plea that Bosch didn't readily understand.
"My one regret is for my children. Who will care for my children? They need food and clothes. I have some money. The money goes to them. Whatever I have. This is my last will and testament signed by me. Give the money to the children. Have Morton give the money and don't charge me anything. Do it for the children."
"His children?" Bosch asked.
"Yeah, I know," Edgar said. "Weird.
What are you doing here? Where is Nicholas?"
They looked at the doorway from the kitchen to the living room.
A short man in a suit, who Bosch guessed was a lawyer, and had to be Morton, stood there. Bosch stood up.
He's dead. It looks like a suicide.
Where?
Master Bath, but I wouldn't...
Morton was already gone, heading to the bathroom.
Bosch called after him.
Don't touch anything!
He nodded to Edgar to follow and make sure.
Bosch sat back down and looked at the pages again.
He wondered how long it took Trent to decide that killing himself was all that he had left, and then to labor over the 3-page note. It was the longest suicide note he had ever encountered.
Morton came back into the living room, Edgar just behind him. His face was ashen, and his eyes held on the floor.
I tried to tell you not to go back there, Bosch said.
The lawyer's eyes came up and fixed on Bosch. They filled with anger, which seemed to restore some color to Morton's face.
Are you people happy now? You completely destroyed him. Give a man's secret to the vultures, they put it on the air, and this is what you get.
He gestured with a hand in the direction of the bathroom.
Mr. Morton, you've got your facts wrong, but essentially it looks like that's what happened. In fact, you'd probably be surprised by how much I agree with you.
Now that he's dead, that must be very easy for you to say.
Is that a note?
Did he leave a note?
Bosch got up and gestured for him to take his spot on the couch in front of the 3 pages.
Just don't touch the pages.
Morton sat down, unfolded a pair of reading glasses, and started studying the pages.
Bosch walked over to Edgar and said in a low voice, I'm going to use the phone in the kitchen to make the calls.
Edgar nodded.
Better get media relations on it. The shit is going to hit that fan.
Yeah.
Bosch picked up the wall phone in the kitchen and saw it had a redial button. He pushed it and waited. He recognized the voice that answered as Morton's. It was an answering machine. Morton said he wasn't home and to leave a message. Bosch called Lieutenant Billet's direct line. She answered right away, and Bosch could tell she was eating.
Well, I hate to break this to you while you're eating, but we're up here at Trent's place.
It looks like he killed himself.
There was silence for a long moment, and then she asked Bosch if he was sure.
I'm sure he's dead, and I'm pretty sure he did it himself.
Hung himself with a couple of wire hangers in the shower. There's a 3-page note here. He denies anything to do with the bones. He blames his death on Channel 4 and the police, mostly. Me and Edgar in particular.
You're the first one I've called.
Well, we all know it wasn't you who...
That's okay, Lieutenant. I don't need the absolution.
What do you want me to do here?
You handle the routine call-outs. I'll call Chief Irving's office and tell him what has transpired.
This is going to get hot.
Yes. What about media relations? There's already a gang of reporters out on the street.
I'll call them.
Did you do anything about Thornton yet?
Already in the pipeline.
The woman from IAD, Bradley, is running with it.
With this latest thing, I'd bet Thornton not only leaked his way out of a job, but they might want to go after him with a charge of some kind.
Bosch nodded. Thornton deserved it. He still had no second thoughts about the scam he had devised.
All right, well, we'll be here. For a while, at least.
Let me know if you find anything there that connects him to the bones.
Bosch thought of the boots with the dirt and the treads and the skateboard.
You got it, he said.
Bosch clicked off the call and then immediately made calls to the coroner's office and Sid.
In the living room, Morton had finished reading the note.
Mr. Morton, when was the last time you talked to Mr. Trent?
Bosch asked.
Last night. He called me at home after the news on Channel 4. His boss had seen it and called him.
Bosch nodded. That accounted for the last call.
You know his boss's name?
Morton pointed to the middle page on the table.
Right here on the list. Alicia Felser. She told him she was going to seek his termination. The studio makes movies for children.
She couldn't have him on a set with a child, you see. The leaking of his record to the media destroyed this man. You recklessly took a man's existence and...
Let me ask the questions.